Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, it's another beautiful Sunday, and of course, time for us to engage in Real Talk with Lola. Real Talk with Lola this Sunday, 6 p.m. Nigeria time, every Sunday. Okay, Lola is here with us, and she has another wonderful guest, and we will be talking this month of women. All right, Lola, how are you doing?
I'm very fine, thank you. Thanks for asking. Like you always say, it could be better.
Yes, sir, it could be better everywhere. All right, let us meet your guest.
Yes, okay. How would I put it? My guest is a childhood friend. Yes, we've come a very long way from being friends and everything. We've become more sisters. Her name is Bumi Afolabi.
All right.
Yes, her name is Bumi Afolabi. Right now, she's based in Canada, and she's one of the people I would say we consider Bumi as a very outspoken, strong woman. Bumi is the kind of person that her personality, you know, her facial expression doesn't depict who Bumi is. But Bumi is a very, very strong person. Bumi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Nice to be on the show.
Yeah, same here. Thanks a lot for coming. While we were growing up, okay, Bumi used to be so intelligent that Bumi used to get all the prizes in school. And then when they call her for physics, chemistry, biology, we used to tell her to sit at the podium and don't bother leaving because they're going to call her for all the other things.
She must be an epic.
Just sit down there and collect all the prizes. No, it was not bad because they will call her for physics, chemistry, biology, math, add math, and then she keeps going back and forth. So we should tell her, sit there, don't go there, but I just sit down there and collect the other ones.
Well, I hope it's paying off now.
Well, we thank God. I think it is.
Yes, it is. So, Bumi, tell us quickly, give us a brief about yourself.
Thank you, Lola, once again. I'll say Bumi Afolabi is, as you've said, I think one of the things that defines me is my strength. I am a chemical engineer by training, but I have never practiced engineering. After I finished school, I moved into IT, and I did that for many years. First of all, working with NCR and then running a family business with my late husband. And then after a while, when I felt that I needed, you know, a change, I went on to do my MBA at Cranfield in the UK. And subsequent to that, I then moved more into the practice of management, worked with Lagos Business School as Alumni Relations Director, and then left there to go to the Nigerian British Chamber of Commerce, where I also worked as Director General for another 2 years. If I then decided again that it was time to, I wanted to do something else again, so I did another career change. I'm now going into the practice of human resources. But as someone who believes in learning, I decided that I needed to get a proper foundation in that before I actually go into the practice. So currently I'm taking a postgraduate program in human resources. And by next year when I'm done, I will then go back again into that world of work. So that's me in very, very high level summary.
All right. Oh. Well, I just why did you, with all the brilliance as described by Lola, why didn't you pursue the career in chemical engineering? Why the switch?
Very good question. What actually happened was that when I did my youth service in Nigeria, we have this compulsory program that after you finish from university, you are sent to a state outside of where you grew up and where you schooled, as a way of getting people to get to know the total Nigeria. So I was in my own case, I was sent to Ogun State, and I was assigned to do my youth service at Unilever at Agbara. Then they had a factory in Agbara.
Okay.
I don't know whether to say fortunately or unfortunately, but whichever way it is, I was posted to the tank farm. And basically all I had to do there was climb the tank every morning, check the level of the oil, and, you know, record it. I did that 3 times a day. So you can imagine that after a while, I began to ask myself, is this what I spent 5 years learning to come and do? But I found it so boring. So eventually, of course, out of curiosity, there were lots of coppers serving at Unilever then. So some of them were my friends in the computer room. So when I started getting bored, I would just go to the computer room. First of all, initially, it was just to gist with them. Then after a while, I'm like, this computer that you people are facing, you know, okay, show me what it's about. Of course, in those days, we left school, you know, working on those giant machines. And,
those papers.
Yes. Those pointers. So the smaller ones in the Unilever office, I was fascinated. And that was how I started learning. And by the time I finished youth service, of course, the usual problem in Nigeria, you look for work for a few months. I mean, in our time, it was a few months. Now we are talking years. And when I didn't get a job after 2-3 months, I said to myself, what am I even, you know, bothering myself with this chemical engineering? I hope it's not even tank farm. I'm going to go and be driving it whenever I find work. So that was why I then, you know, said I'm going to go into computers. So again, I went to take a 6-month diploma program in computers. And then, by God's grace, I got a job with NCR, then as I computer education manager, and that was the end of chemical engineering for me.
Wow. Sound interesting. All right, go ahead, Lola.
Yeah. I think she was, I think she was rather fortunate. And again, like I said, sometimes you just need to follow your dreams and your passion, and it can lead you to where you're going. So, Bumi, my first question for you this evening is this, okay? I mean, after you said yesteryears, okay? As a young woman of today and of yesteryears, I mean, what's the difference? I know there's a lot of difference because, I mean, young women in those days, there were so many things we couldn't sum up the courage to do. You understand? And when you look at the young women of today, they I'm talking of so many things. I'm going to be very diverse now. I'm talking about marriage, about beliefs, about even the things they crop into. And because I remember I was asking somebody that during our own time, and which is your own time too, the moment we finished youth call and everything, they were already breathing down your neck as if you were like an outcast when you're not married.
Yeah.
You understand? But the kids of nowadays, you're seeing them at 30, 31, and they're telling you they're still young. And I'm like, okay, young.
Yes, indeed. It's the difference in the world we grew up in and the world that our children are growing up in. I mean, it's like 180 degrees apart. It's so different. Let me start with careers. In our time, as you said, you know, it was very straightforward. Thankfully, in our own generation, our parents had already started believing in educating the girl child, at least our own educated parents. We know that it's not yet an equal level grant for everybody. But we're fortunate that, you know, as middle class people, we got that education. But even in spite of that, they still expected that when you're done, you know, the next thing, as you said, is where is the man coming from? You need to marry, you need to start having children and all that. Fortunately for me, let me just quickly digress a little and give my own example. My own father in particular, you know, I'm ever grateful for one thing that he did. I got married very early. Immediately, by the time I was doing my youth service, I already had met my late husband, and he was ready to actually get married even then. But my father insisted that I must finish my youth service and get a job before he would agree that I would get married, because he said no child of his would be married without having her own job and her own career. And I'll come back to that later, but I just wanted to quickly chip that in. So in those days, it was very, very important that you work, but it was probably more important that you, you know, get married and start having children. But the reverse is the case now. Of course, we have trained our own children. We believe a lot more in ensuring that everybody is educated, both the girl and the boy child. And we have done that for all our children by God's grace. But we find that because of that enlightenment, and especially because a lot of us have also exposed our children to the Western world, which was something we didn't have access to until perhaps our postgraduate degrees. A lot of us, our children have done their undergraduate either abroad or they've been exposed to people who have done it abroad. So they have also imbibed some of those quote and unquote Western principles, such that it's right now they're more focused on, you know, their own personal achievement. So their achievement is not tied to bearing the title of Mrs. Their achievement is tied to what they can do by themselves. They also want to get to the, you know, peak of their careers. And if a man comes along the way, fine. But that's not, they're not using that as any stumbling block at all. You know, they just want to go, go, go. So both the men and the women, they're just going for it. In terms of beliefs, I think it's still around the same thing. A lot of what they believe is influenced by, you know, the Western culture that they've been exposed to. And some of that, of course, I think is not so good. But hey, that is the world we live in. We've kind of, they live in a culture that is a bit of a mix of the traditional, God-fearing kind of culture that we grew up in, with a more westernized, more open, you know, approach that we find in the Western world. But I think it's not a bad thing. We just need to continue to still let them know that we shouldn't lose the good things in the old, but now we try to embrace also the good things in the new.
Wow. I just hope our listeners can pick up one or two things from what you said, because if we I've seen that this trend is actually, I won't actually call it worrisome, but it's something I've noticed that, you know, you see these young, not so young ladies anymore, not being so focused on marriage the way we used to be. And again, I see it as things maybe kind of, you know, turning around, evolving. People are beginning to see that, look, you know what, there's life beyond being a missus.
Yes.
Like I always say to people, it's just, you know, like I always say, it's just overrated. That title, it's just overrated. It's just overrated. So it's on getting into it that you realize that, okay, you know what, you can, I mean, if it happens, it's fine. If it doesn't happen, yeah, I mean, it's also fine. Aru, do you have any question or should I go on?
Go ahead.
Let me use Aru's style. Aru always comes in at the half mark.
Yes.
He always comes at the half mark. Yeah. Now, so basically, okay, Bumi, I know that we all believe that in the workplace, now I'm going to go into the strength of a woman now, which is what we're discussing, okay? In the workplace, without it being said, okay, you can feel it, you know, like there's this vibe around. You can feel that, you know, women are supposed, like the last guest that came last week, okay? Some of the questions that somebody asked me later was that, you know, she says, you know, most of the time it's like an unwritten law that women are basically supposed to be seen in the workplace. You know, like I was looking at a write-up that somebody says that lecturers, for example, VCs, you know, you hardly have women VCs, and even when you do, you know, they earn lower than the male. Okay? Okay, there was an argument with somebody that said, well, you can't use that as a yardstick. That has to do with your negotiation power. How you can negotiate. But again, I believe most of the time that women are always seen as underdogs. I mean, what's your take on this?
Yes, and there is no doubt that women have suffered a lot of injustice, you know, over the years in this regard when it comes to equity in the workplace. I think the good news, first of all, is that things are changing, not as rapidly as we would want them to, but it's certainly changing. And also, I think it's also important to make a distinction between Nigeria, at least, which is where I know I'm familiar with in Africa, and the Western world, which to a large extent, because of you know, exposure and information online, we know a bit of what is happening over there. Nigeria is obviously still a bit behind the Western world, but it's still around the same thing, that there is a lack of pay equity. Pay equity is that people who are doing the same work are being paid the same amount, as long as it's the same work that they're doing. So the gender of the person doing the work should not matter. What should matter is that, are we doing ABC? If the two of us are doing ABC, whether it's Arun that is doing it or for me that's doing it, then they should get Y amount of money, if that is what the job entails. And also in terms of being seen and not heard, I think that is one thing that has changed very, very quickly. Because as we said earlier, women of nowadays, you know, they are no longer subservient. They found their voice and they are, you know, they are ready to stand up for what they believe in. They're in a meeting with every other person and, you know, they open up their mouths and they say what they want to say. They say what they believe should be said. Of course, we still have a few, especially in, I'll say, our own culture, who have grown up with, you know, that a woman should be seen and not heard thing, that you still need to help to be able to come out of their shell. In fact, I remember at my last place of work, there was a particular lady that I actually took under my wing, you know, to try and coach her to say, look, you have to, you know, let your voice be heard. You cannot be speaking to me, you are looking down. You are, we're colleagues, you know. So I actually took her literally under my wings to coach her so that she could become more assertive within the workplace. So essentially what I'm saying is that I think that is changing, you know, but obviously we're not yet where we should be. But pay equity is really the biggest challenge that I think we're facing, and not just in Nigeria, but also even in the Western world. However, the good thing in the Western world is that there are now legislations around this thing, so that if companies are doing it, they are doing it knowing that they're running a risk, and the women who know their rights can take them up on it. However, in Nigeria, I don't think we have a pay equity legislation yet. So that is probably one of the things that women organizations like WIMBYS and co. that advocate for women, I think, should actually begin to take up to ensure, so that we can have that in place. Because once we have it backed by law, then it makes it easier for people to demand their rights. It's then no longer about, you know, whether your boss likes you or doesn't like you. You don't have to play politics in order to get what you deserve. You know, you will get what you deserve because they know that if they don't do it, you know, there is a penalty. One good thing that's going on in Nigeria is that at least there is a lot of advocacy going on for women in management, for the girl child education and all that. So that part of it is good, but a lot of it still needs to be backed by law so that people will actually do what they should do.
I don't know. I'm wondering where you, maybe in some smaller organizations, but generally in like the banks, telcos, and the big corporations, do they still do that disparity in payment between male and female? I'm not too sure about that.
As I said, it's improving, but I think there's still elements of elements of it. It's just that it's not as obvious as it used to be.
Okay, so how do you place people like me, who I have more females than males working with me?
Well, I think you're one of the good ones. I will place you. And to be honest, I think there are lots of men who are advocates for women. I must say kudos to you and people like that. We have quite a lot of men these days that are advocating for women, so things are definitely changing.
Okay, let me come in here, Lola. It's not yet the half hour mark, but let me come in here. Now, some years back, I had a little interaction with this South African in Nigeria, and the man was saying to me that he really truly appreciates the resilience of the Nigerian woman. That right where opposite his office, when he opens his window, he sees this woman coming every morning to sweep the place, set up a stop for the Bolly and Gradnot, and she's back the next day. Every day of the week. So I told him that you will be surprised, or you shouldn't be surprised, to note that that woman is using the proceeds from that venture to send her kids to school. And we see a lot of them. There are a lot of, recently I've been going around the Southwest, and I see a lot of women who you call Iyalamala. They are sending their children to schools abroad. They are building edifices to sell Amala, moving from Buka to, you know, the upgraded Buka where you have a VIP, there's air conditioning, there are fridges, interior decor tiled and all of that. And it's not the males doing that. It's certainly the women, you know. And so now, in terms of entrepreneurship, I think, well, I might be wrong, women are more, they have that entrepreneurial nature more than the men. Now, as a Nigerian in diaspora, do you find that happening, you know, globally?
To be honest, I'm not sure that I think that women are particularly more entrepreneurial than men. I think what happens is that because women are nurturers by nature, you tend to see what they do with the fruits of their entrepreneurship more visibly. And then so that way it makes it look as if, you know, they are the ones doing so much. Because there are quite a lot of men that I know as well who are, you know, entrepreneurs, successful, doing good things. But the care of the children, the efforts to ensure that children are well-trained and all that, I think by nature, women are more concerned about that. And so therefore, it looks as if, and then of course, we also have a lot of single parents, more exactly. female single parents than male. That also tends to skew the picture a bit, because typically, I mean, when push comes to shove, they will do whatever they need to do. So if they need to sell Amala to ensure that their child goes to school, they will do it. If they need to go and carry something on their heads to make money to ensure that their child goes to school, they will do it. So I think that is what has painted that picture. But there is no doubt that women are very entrepreneurial. In fact, a lot of even business people would tell you they prefer to employ women in their business, simply because we're more loyal. Again, maybe it's that feminine characteristic. We're not as the average woman, because of course we have to be careful about pigeonholing and stereotyping, but the average woman is not as aggressive as the average man. We are, if we're in a place and we're okay and where our needs are being met, you know, the atmosphere is conducive, we can stay in a place for 5-10 years, you know, as long as things are going okay. But a man, you know, wants to be, you know, is very aggressive. He stays somewhere 1 year, 2 years. He's looking for the next thing, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, but again, there can be a little bit of disadvantage to that, because I've been in a situation where it was mostly women. I think the bickering, the backstabbing was a little bit too much.
No, that comes with the territory. That comes with the territory for women. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, the territory, wanting everybody, you know, it was just a little bit overboard for me.
We have our flaws.
But one thing I was trying to emphasize, for example, let me bring it home. You know, my mom was a teacher, school administrator, but at every point in time, she was selling something, from beads to jewelry to, you know, later she started selling bread. My father said, you can't be selling bread in Victoria Island, not in front of the house. Not in front of the house. I'm just saying that, you know, our moms were like that. You know, they probably would be, you know, supporting, maybe that's the reward for, you know, while the man or their husbands took care of so many things. They were always there to support and support support.
No, I think it's what actually what I, because I think I'm like your mom in a way. I think I have the belief that a woman should always have a plan B, something to fall to. I mean, you can't just sit with, I'm actually teaching my children that I am of the school of thought, you know, like I always say, that even though you're a banker, you should have another skill. Even if you're not, I mean, you should have something that you're doing on the side. I mean, if, for example, you're a doctor, you should have something small you're doing on the side that is your own skill. I mean, it doesn't have to go with medicine. It can be you being able to bake. So, Aru, your mom is just what I think a woman should be. Having some, no, seriously, you should have something on the side that you can fall to in case push gets to shove. Aru's mom has money in the wardrobe somewhere, like I always do too.
She has envelopes, well labeled. Envelopes, one label. Labeled envelopes. She doesn't take money from the world. Those envelopes are like that, brown, white, with her fine handwriting, labeled there. And I remember my father would always go to her, give me some, okay, load me this. He say, this is for our ladies, women, something. He say, no, I'll give you tomorrow, I'll give you tomorrow. She was always there to support the you know.
So another thing that I also,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that another thing that might also be responsible for this might be this pay inequity that had been there. So because women were probably not earning as much as they needed to because of all these reasons, so they've had to make up with, you know, side hustles and side businesses. So it's just become part of our DNA over time that we must always have something else doing.
And just like Lola is doing for her children, I think it also paid off, you know, for me. I have also been selling things, you know, from school. When I was in university, I would come to Lagos, buy t-shirts at Keyside, Mandylands, then I would go and sell it to them in Ibadan. You know, we would always be selling something because everybody knows it. Yes, exactly. That's what I saw. And we know that multiple streams of income is it, you know, even from way back then. How much would they give you to go to school? You know, you need to support yourself one way or the other, you know. And I find a lot of women doing this, even on internet right now. If you look at the young people, the generation after us, there are more women doing stuff, you know, selling on the internet than the males, you know. And that for me, you know, speaks a lot. It speaks volume. They are the ones that are doing chocolate. They are the ones that are doing all kinds of things, baking and cooking and supplying. The logistics business in Nigeria now is booming because of them, thanks to COVID too, because they need to deliver, you know. And if you look at the profile of most, they are largely women. And I find this very, very, very instructive. The other thing, I don't know whether it's correct, but I hear that women are more prudent with money. And therefore, you know, if a man takes a loan, you know, and a woman takes a loan same day, the woman is likely to repay, you know, faster than the
male.
Yeah,
and it comes to that same thing we said earlier in terms of aggression.
Aggression.
The woman is, and which is why a lot of people prefer to employ women, they'll tell you that the woman will not steal their money. But if they put a man there, the money will not come back, you know. So that aggressive spirit, maybe the man actually means to pay back, but at the minute he's thinking of paying back, somebody comes and says, there's this business. We say, okay, let me quickly use it for this other one. Before you know it, the time to pay the money has gone. But meanwhile, the woman will be, I promised this person, let me go and fulfill my promise.
Okay. Also, the Igbos. If you know the Igbo culture, most of the traders, their wives are the ones who handle the accounts. You know, they sit down in the shop. They are in charge, as against the men. The men just do the okay, bring this way. But then I go meet madam. If you want to introduce a new product, it's madam. If they are contributing money, it's madam. Madam is in charge of the cash. And sometimes those men are the ones who sent their wives to school. But they make good use of them. They are usually the director of finance, you know, and the man is chairman, managing director.
That's because by nature, like Bumi said, women by nature, we actually look at every detail. Men don't most of the time. You give a man a bill of 2,000, he says okay, and he pays. Sometimes women look at everything. I'm like, okay, why is this on this bill? Why are we paying for this?
Mm.
Then you hear something like, okay, madam, no vex. You remove it. Okay, so why? By the time you hear madam no vex like four times, a $2,000 bill will come to like maybe at the end of the day, 800.
Yeah,
and then,
I remember
there was a situation in my house then when we were in Nigeria. You know, like every quarter, I'm being nice now. Like every month, we used to buy bulbs. And, you know, my husband didn't say anything wrong in us buying bulbs. Until one day, I said, hey, wait a minute, even if we're NEPA, we can't be blowing bulbs every day like this now. What's going on with this bulb issue?
Mm.
And the person says, that's how we buy it. I'm like, yes, that's how we, is the bulb bumped? No. Where are the bulbs they are buying? They're in the kitchen. What are we cooking them in the kitchen for? So we should not be buying bulb every month.
Okay, all right. We are now at the half-hour mark. Time for us to take a break, sip some water. And, of course, I don't have anything here with me on a day like this. Let's just listen to this one. It's Superwoman by Tenny. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. It's Real Talk with Lola, International Women's Day edition. And this month, we've been celebrating the strength of the woman. And in the last 30 minutes or so, Lola has been conversing with Bumi Afolabi, of course, with me interjecting. All right, Lola, over to you again.
Okay, quickly, Bumi, I have two questions by that was sent in right now. Okay, and the first question the person wants to know, he says, okay, he says you mentioned that your husband is late, okay, and you know, wants to know how long ago was this, and how have you adjusted to this major loss? It's like, actually, it's like an embedded question, and it says that, I mean, he noticed that you mentioned that you were doing business with your husband. Now he's saying that, okay, now that your husband is of late, and has it kind of affected the business? I mean, the way customers relate to you. I mean, did it affect the business? You know, did people see your husband not being there again for them not be able to relate to you? I mean, you know, because you are now a woman, you know, we're looking at the feminine thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it bring that into play when it happened?
Okay. Thank you very much. And thanks to whoever sent the question. I'll take it from the beginning. My husband passed 2013 December, so it's getting on 8 years now, and I thank God that, yes, it's been a long, tough journey, but I think, as Lola, as you said at the beginning, the strength that I have naturally has actually been of tremendous help to me. But one of the things that has come out of that is that I've also taken, you know, developed a passion for women who are going through similar situations. And I actually, you know, I reach out to people when I know that, you know, they've lost a spouse, and try to help them through the same situations. In terms of the business, it's unfortunately, we had closed down the business that we were running together before his death. Because what had happened was, remember, I was saying earlier that it got to a point that I felt, you know, I wanted to do something else. I felt that the business had kind of like reached its peak. And many reasons that I can't go into now in terms of what was happening in the business environment at that time, I didn't think that we could really make much progress in that specific area. So I decided that it was time to do something else. But one thing about me is that I believe that before you start any new venture, you must acquire knowledge. So that was when I went to do my MBA. As a matter of fact, funny story that I usually tell to try and provide a bit of treatment to people. I lost my husband 2 weeks before I started my MBA. And when his death happened, of course, the natural thing people expected was that I was going to postpone my MBA, you know, take the time to mourn and all that. And I said, no. I went ahead and started my MBA 15 days after he died, simply because I knew that having that MBA program would anchor me and keep me, you know, quote and unquote, from losing it. And it actually did that for me. It helped to keep me focused so that I could still do the things I needed to do. And of course, I think, as we've said, my inner strength also helped a bit with ensuring that I managed to go through that season in spite of all the issues. I mean, the typical Nigerian issues with your in-laws, issues with, you know, sorting out the business. Because even though I had closed the business we were running together, he had actually started another business a few years before that on his own. So I then had to, you know, deal with that. Unfortunately, because it was a manufacturing business and I really didn't have the aptitude for or interest in manufacturing, I decided that I wasn't going to try and run it. I mean, to the dismay, obviously, of his staff and all that. So eventually, I took the decision to close down the business. And so I never actually had to experience whether people would have reacted to me differently because of his absence. But I would also say that even when we were doing the IT business, which was the one we ran together, we didn't have that problem, probably because I was actually the technical person in that business. As a matter of fact, in the earlier days of the business, I had to be careful to let people know that it was a family business being run by the two of us. Because sometimes when people would come, because I brought the customers, because they were people that I had worked with in my previous job. So people tended to gravitate towards me and, you know, give me, you know, quote unquote, the respect of the person doing the thing. And I had to consciously, again, to ensure that for equity's sake, to let them know that, yes, I may be the face that you're seeing in this business, but it's actually my husband and I, you know, he's doing his part, I'm doing my part. So I don't think, even if I had been still running the business, I wouldn't have had that problem, because all through the life of the business, I was quite visible and, you know, a lot of people dealt with me and related with me directly. So that's it.
Okay, so but
I answered the question fully.
Well, I find
think
something.
I was lucky.
Yeah, sorry, I find something very intriguing, even though I truly and sincerely understand it. When you go through a tragic incident, you need to channel your energy somewhere else so that you can take away all the pain and, you know, and all of that. So you are channeling your energies in a particular direction, and it doesn't weigh you down. It doesn't reduce the sense of loss that you have. But what I really wanted to ask is, now, coming from an African setting, a Nigerian setting, a Yoruba setting, you know, 2 weeks before MBA and you went ahead with the MBA, how did you cope? I'm sure tongues would have been wagging and a lot of people will be saying all kinds of things.
Oh, yes.
You know?
The tongues did wag.
From family to friends to people who were like, you know, in fact, I'll tell you another funny story. One of the quotes I heard from, you know, someone was that, you know, in 1 month after her husband has passed, she's already wearing jeans. You know, and my question was, I was already doing working. So even my workplace only gave me 7 days leave. So where exactly was I supposed to get the 45 days off that I was supposed to use to go and mourn? But anyway, on a more serious note, yes, it was, a lot of people felt that, you know, they didn't think it was right based on our culture. But one thing I've always believed in is defining what I call defining my own normal, you know, and I don't believe in chaining myself to a culture that's not working. For me, I act based on, you know, first of all, my faith. In other words, what does the Bible that I believe in say about it? If my faith and the Bible doesn't tell me that what I'm doing is wrong, then, hey, I don't care whose ox is God. And then two, some level of, you know, right and wrong, which of course also derives a bit from my faith. My question to people when they ask me those is, where is it stated? Just as you said, that until you see me sitting down with ashes on my head, you know, wearing sackcloth, that I have not mourned my husband. I said, you're not there with me at night. You don't know whether I stay up all night crying my eyes out. But because you see me in the morning, I wear my dress. And yeah. I did wear black for the 45 days. It's just that I was not sitting in the house. But you see me, you know, wearing my dress. You see me, at least I rub powder, even if I don't. I'm not too much of a makeup person. So you think that because of that, I'm not mourning him? I mean, I was married to him for 22 years. There is no way. I mean, if you have been able to stay married to someone for 22 years, even if it is just the fact that that person is no longer by your side when you wake up in the morning, you will miss that. You know, yeah. And as Yorubas have a saying that, you know, even if you were fighting with somebody, you will miss that fight
when
you are no longer there to fight with. So there is no way, and this is the father of my children. You know, every day I look at those children, it is him that I see. One of them in particular looks like him. So how can I not feel his absence? But the fact is that I will not be defined by that, particularly because based on my faith, I know that he has gone to somewhere better. So yes, I mean, we're no longer seen physically, but hey, it's not like he's gone somewhere to suffer. So I'm comforted in the fact that I will see him at some point in time, someday, as we believe. In fact, on the day that we did the afternoon of tributes for him, I sang a song, you know, in that regard, and everybody was like, how can you be doing all this? And I said, that's because of, you know, the faith and the strength that I have. I'm not going to sit down and mourn. He's gone. But life has to go on. My children have to go to school. I have to, you know, complete my studies so that I can go back to work. I had stopped, you know, fortunately I had started another job by then, so I was doing school part-time. But I had to pay for my studies. I was studying in the UK. It was pounds. My children were studying in the UK, it was pounds. Where was I going to get money from sitting down? You know, in fact, another funny story. You know, while in the process of trying to tie up loose ends in the business, I had cost to, you know, go to the bank to try and sort out some financial obligations. And when we had the first meeting, the bank manager I was meeting was like, ah, madam, won't you take time to, you know, finish your money before we have this meeting? So my question to him was, Mr. Bank Manager, is the interest on your loan going to stop while I'm mourning?
Which
I said, if that is the case, then please let us continue this meeting. But if your interest will stop, I'm happy to go and mourn. 45 days, I'll sit in my house. But that, it means that your interest will stop also for that period. But if it's not going to, then hey, that mourning is going to be very expensive for me. You know, so that's it.
That's what Yoruba calls about suku amareo.
Oh yes, so we have to open eyes. We have to. But the truth of the matter is that you do feel it. It's impossible for you not to. I mean, you get to the house, we're living in a big duplex, and I come and I'm the only one in the house because the children had even gone to school by that time. How will you not feel it? There'll be days when I'll sit on the staircase and just look. But yeah, but the people who are talking are not there with me at that time.
Yeah, that does. I mean, it's actually a very tough one. Okay, and it brings me to a question that I would ask you. Now you've experienced both sides. You know, you've experienced being married, and you've experienced now you are single. You understand? Yeah. So, what are the advantages and disadvantages of this each state for a woman, and how do you draw strength?
Let me answer the first question first, because that's probably easier. Where do I draw strength? I draw strength from my faith. I draw strength from knowing that I have a relationship with an almighty being who loves me and has my back always. So that gives me the assurance that I'm never alone. You know, I know that I'm working with someone who has seen the end from the beginning. So even though there are things that I don't know and I don't see, I trust that he, holding his hand, will walk the road together and everything will be sorted out. So that's where I draw my strength from. In terms of the two sides, of course, as we know, everything has its pros and cons. Sometimes I also joke that, you know, I got married very young, you know, barely 21, and I also got widowed very young. So, whereas some of my age mates are just getting married in the last couple of years. So everybody, you know, everybody's journey is different.
They all go through,
yeah, different times and seasons at different times. To be honest, I am, you know, looking forward to remarrying and trusting that that will happen sooner than later. But I must say that it has been, I've also enjoyed this time, you know, of being single again, as I call it. Probably because, as I say to people, that I never really had the proper single season, you know, after I left school. So
yeah,
this is my time to enjoy that, to enjoy having to think of myself only. You know, because as a married person, your focus is, you know, your husband, your children, and all that. And that was my life for many years. Thankfully, the children are older. They're all, you know, everybody's sorted. So I can focus on myself. I mean, I remember when I did my MBA, I actually wanted to do this career change at the time. But by the time they started telling me the salaries I would be earning, because I'll be starting more or less from the bottom, I knew that it wasn't going to work because, hey, I had bills to pay. Children were in school. But now I can do that because, I mean, my responsibilities are fewer. So even if they say come and start from zero, I don't mind, because is it only me? Okay, if all I have to eat is one spoon of rice, I'll eat it to achieve, you know, what I want to achieve.
What I want to achieve,
Yeah, that's not going to happen, thankfully. So, but basically, I think the what I would say in terms of the both sides is that, you know, whatever season you find yourself in, live your best life today. Don't tie, you know, the enjoyment of your life to the fact that you are not in the other side of the grass that you think is greener. Whichever side of the grass that you are on, you can make it green by watering the grass. And of course, there is nothing wrong with aspiring for a different season, a different level. But do not let, you know, that aspiration detract you from enjoying the current state that you are in. Because it says when you are at your fullest and you are, you know, the best that you can be in your current season, that you would actually attract the things that are in the new season to come to you. That's what I believe. So whether married, single, widowed, separated, whatever it is, you know, your life is not defined by your marital status. Your life is defined by whatever purpose it is that God has put in your heart that you should, you know, be achieving. You know, whether it's helping people, whether it's in your professional life, whatever it is, find that purpose, leave it to the full, and, you know, just be the best that you can be. That's what I would say.
All right, sounds like a good
point. I think I agree with you. I agree with you on that.
It sounds like a good point to hang it. I just say it sounds like a good point to hang the conversation, which means sounds like a good place for us to end it. We go, but I mean, we'll take your last words, Lola. And I think that she has put it in proper perspective for me, even as a man. You know, I like to see women who are very focused. We don't get emotional. They use their head and not the heart, you know. And the things I've heard this evening, you know, have shown me that, yes, there are women who can think straight. It's not just about brooding. Yes, I've gone through this. No, but I can rise up and face the challenges in spite of whatever is happening to me. And that's really the strength of a woman. Okay? All right, so that's my own last take. I'm sure you guys will have one or two things to say to round up.
Yeah, for me, thanks, Bumi. Thank you so very much. I mean, for me, it's actually a privilege to have you on this my talk show. Because, I mean, one of the qualities I look at is, you know, women should be able to realize that, you know, strength is not the physical strength. Strength is what you bring out from the situation you find yourself. And I always tell people that a lot, that, you know what, when you are in a situation like exactly what you are doing right now, if you want to get into something, go out there. I mean, take whatever it's going to offer you and make the best of it. I mean, don't just sit down and brood and, you know, this, oh, poor me. And I used to tell people, I mean, nobody's going to keep wiping your tears. You need to get up and, I mean, like somebody always says, one of my mentors always says, and I always tell people, power is not giving, power is taking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You understand? And that is one of the mentors I always use to motivate myself when I'm feeling so, you know, oh no, poor me, I'm just a woman. You know, nobody is going to look at that at the end of the day. Like you rightly said, Bumi, there are things out there that you need to do as a woman. And at times we need to like get the scales off our face that, I'm a woman. A woman cannot do this. A woman cannot do that. No. First and foremost, we're human beings, you understand? And that's what I wish to myself. I'm a human being, and this is what it is, and this is what I have to deal with. So, Bumi, before we close up, we have a few more minutes. What do you have to tell my listeners as a woman? Tell us what you think a strong woman should do just to keep going.
I think I've actually literally said that in my last statement. But yeah, I think, first of all, you know, draw. I always say to people, don't say to me that you are not a strong person. There is nobody that is born strong in that sense. You have to find, you know, the motivation to be strong within yourself. You have to look at what it is that you need to achieve, what it is that you need to do, and then do whatever you need to do. If you have to, you know, speak to yourself, knock yourself on the head, you know, do whatever it is, read, go and get a mentor. You must find that strength within yourself to do what you need to do. Don't ever, ever let anybody tell you how to live your life. You define your own normal. And maybe one thing I forgot to mention is that I actually wrote a book out of this experience over the passing of my husband, which I titled Incredible Courage. And it's available on Amazon for anyone who would like to read it. But basically, what I did in that book was to chronicle my journey, you know, through the MBA period and through the things I went through, but showing that in all, you do not have to be defined by the negative things that happen to your life. You must draw from the inner strength you have, get that courage from wherever you have to get it, you know, and go do what you need to do, because you can. Yes, we can, and we have to, and we will. We must live our best life today.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you very much. Real Talk with Lola. And it has been another fantastic one today. And I just pray and hope that our listeners have gotten one or two things out of what we've been talking about. The strength of a woman. And today it has been with Bumi Afolabi. All right, Lola. Next week promises to be another one, I believe.
Yeah, and we'll wrap up then next week.
Okay, so we'll be wrapping up.
We'll go back to something else.
All right, thank you very much, Lola. Thank you very much, Bumi Afolabi. It's the Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Thank you, and thank you, and thank you. Okay, so next
is... Thank you, it was nice being on the program.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, next is Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. We're moving now to Ottawa in Canada with Dr. A.G. Ahmed. All right, I leave you with this one. Good woman, bye. Favor, and then we'll come back to it.
A good woman will come from the Lord. They know they see her for marketing. A good woman is a blessing from above. Her type will not be for marketing. I show you more, Yaku. When you batrako, this is silver. You know more, those Yaku. When you batrako, those Yaku. Always loving everybody, no discrimination. What a demand, what a demand, no competition. Chugu is a
blessing from above. You will find that the wife will find that a good thing. So give me an obtained favor from the Lord.
Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.